Section 2, The Feminist Movement, An American Story. In 1960, the housewife-oriented magazine Red Book asked readers to send examples of why young mothers feel trapped. Some 24,000 women responded. One of them was Herma Snyder, a housewife and mother of three in Nevada. Snyder wrote that as a high school and college student, she had dreamed of a career in journalism. After getting married and having three children, that dream died. Cemented to my house by three young children, she wrote, there were days in which I saw no adult human being except the milkman as he made his deliveries and spoke to no one from the time my husband left in the morning until he returned at night. She added, each night as I tucked my sons into bed, I thanked God that they would grow up to be men, that they would be able to teach, write, heal, advise, travel, or do anything else they chose. Desperate for greater fulfillment in her life, Snyder eventually took a job as a part-time hotel clerk. About this decision, she said, my cashier's job is not the glamorous career I once dreamed of, and I know that it can be said that my solution is not a solution at all, merely an escape. But it seems to me that when the demands of children and household threaten to suffocate you, an escape is a solution. Quoted in The Female Experience, an American documentary. A weakened women's movement. Herma Snyder was not alone. Although many women were content to be homemakers, by the early 1960s, scores of them had grown dissatisfied with their roles. At the same time, those who worked outside the home were recognizing their unequal status as reflected in lower pay and fewer opportunities. These developments led to the rise of a new feminist movement in the 1960s. Feminism. The belief that men and women should be equal politically, economically, and socially had been a weak and often embattled force since the adoption of the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing women's voting rights in 1920. Soon after the amendment's passage, the women's movement split into two camps. One group, the League of Women Voters, tended to promote laws to protect women and children, such as limiting the hours they could work. The National Woman's Party, or NWP, on the other hand, opposed protective legislation for women. The NWP believed it reinforced workplace discrimination. In 1923, the NWP persuaded members of Congress to introduce the first Equal Rights Amendment aimed at forbidding federal, state, and local laws from discriminating on the basis of gender. Since the women's movement was divided, however, Congress could afford to ignore the amendment. The onset of World War II provided women with greater opportunity, at least temporarily. With many men enlisted in the Army, women became an integral part of the nation's workforce. When the war ended, however, many women lost their jobs to the returning men. Despite having to return to their domestic work, many women gradually re-entered the labor market. By 1960, they made up almost one-third of the nation's workforce. Yet many people continued to believe that women, even college-educated women, could better serve society by remaining in the home to influence the next generation of men. Reading check. Examining. How did World War II affect women? The women's movement reawakens. By the early 1960s, many women were increasingly resentful of a world where newspaper ads separated jobs by gender, clubs refused them membership, banks denied them credit, and worst of all, they often were paid less for the same work. Generally, women found themselves shut out of higher-paying and prestigious professions such as law, medicine, and finance. Although about 47% of American women were in the workforce in the 1960s, three-fourths of them worked in lower-paying and routine clerical sales or factory jobs, or as cleaning women and hospital attendants. As more women entered the workforce, the protest against inequities grew louder. Women had also gained a better understanding of their inequality in society from their experiences in the civil rights and anti-war movements. Often they were restricted to menial tasks and rarely had a say in any policy decisions. From the broader perspective, the women's movement was part of the 1960s quest for rights. Government. Fighting for workplace rights. Two forces helped bring the women's movement to life again. One was the mass protest of ordinary women. The second was a government initiative, the President's Commission on the Status of Women, established by President Kennedy and headed by Eleanor Roosevelt. The Commission's report highlighted the problems of women in the workplace and helped create networks of feminist activists who lobbied in Congress for women's legislation. In 1963, with the support of labor, they won passage of the Equal Pay Act, which in most cases outlawed paying men more than women for the same job. Congress gave women another boost by including them in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, a measure originally designed to fight racial bias. Title VII of the Act outlawed job discrimination by private employers not only on the basis of race, color, religion, and national origin, but also of gender. This measure became decisive legal basis for advances made by the women's movement. Given prevailing attitudes about what kind of work was proper for women, change took time. Even the federal agency charged with administering the new law, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, still held to the idea that jobs should be distinguished by gender. In August 1965, for example, the commission ruled that gender-segregated help wanted ads were legal. The feminine mystique. Many date the women's movement from the publication of Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique in 1963. Friedan had traveled around the country interviewing women who had graduated with her from Smith College in 1942. She found that while most of these women reported having everything they could want in life, they still felt unfulfilled. Friedan described these feelings in her book. The problem lay buried, unspoken for many years in the minds of American women. Each suburban wife struggled with it alone. As she made the beds, shopped for groceries, chauffeured Cub Scouts and Brownies, she was afraid to ask even of herself the silent question, "Is this all?" From The Feminine Mystique. Friedan's book became a bestseller. Many women soon began reaching out to one another, pouring out their anger and sadness in what came to be known as consciousness-raising sessions. While they talked informally about their unhappiness, they were building the base for a nationwide movement. The time is now. In June 1966, Friedan returned to a thought that she and others had been considering, the need for women to form a national organization. On the back of a napkin, she scribbled down her intentions to take the actions needed to bring women into the mainstream of American society, now in fully equal partnership with men. Friedan and others then set out to form the National Organization for Women, or NOW. NOW soon leapt off the napkin and into the headlines. In October 1966, a group of about 300 women and men held the founding conference of NOW. "The time has come," its founders declared, "to confront with concrete action the conditions which now prevent women from enjoying the equality of opportunity and freedom of choice, which is their right as individual Americans and as human beings." The new organization responded to frustrated housewives by demanding greater educational opportunities for women. The group also focused much of its energy on aiding women in the workplace. NOW leaders denounced the exclusion of women from certain professions and from most levels of politics. They lashed out against the practice of paying women less than men for equal work, a practice the Equal Pay Act had not eliminated. The efforts to pass the Equal Rights Amendment pushed the organization's membership over 200,000. By July 1972, the movement even had a magazine of its own, Ms., which kept readers informed on women's issues. The editor of the new magazine was Gloria Steinem, an author and public figure who was one of the movement's leading figures. Reading check. Identifying. What two forces helped bring the women's movement to life again? Successes and failures. During the late 1960s and early 1970s, the women's movement fought to enforce Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, lobbied to repeal laws against abortion, and worked for legislation against gender discrimination in employment, housing, and education. Along the way, it experienced success as well as failure. Striving for equality in education. One of the movement's notable achievements was in education. Kathy Stribel's story highlighted the discrimination female students often faced in the early 1970s. In 1971, Stribel, a high school junior at St. Paul, Minnesota, wanted to compete for her school's swim team, but the school did not allow girls to join. Kathy's mother, Charlotte, was a member of the local NOW chapter. Through it, she learned that St. Paul had recently passed an ordinance prohibiting gender discrimination in education. She filed a grievance with the city's human rights department, and officials required the school to allow Kathy to swim. Shortly after joining the team, Kathy beat out one of the boys and earned a spot at a meet. As she stood on the block waiting to swim, the opposing coach declared that she was ineligible to compete because the meet was outside St. Paul and thus beyond the jurisdiction of its laws. They pulled that little girl right off the block, Charlotte Strible recalled angrily. Recognizing the problem, leaders of the movement pushed lawmakers to enact federal legislation banning gender discrimination in education. In 1972, Congress responded by passing a law known collectively as the Educational Amendments. One section, Title IX, prohibited federally funded schools from discriminating against girls and young women in nearly all aspects of its operations, from admissions to athletics. Many schools implemented this new law slowly or not at all, but women now had federal law on their side. Roe versus Wade. One of the most important goals for many women activists was the repeal of laws against abortion. Until 1973, the right to regulate abortion was reserved to the states. This was in keeping with the original plan of the Constitution, which reserved all police power, the power to control people and property in the interest of safety, health, welfare, and morals, to the state. Early in the country's history, some abortion was permitted in the early stages of pregnancy. But after the middle of the 1800s, when states adopted statutory laws, abortion was prohibited except to save the life of the mother. Women who chose to have an abortion faced criminal prosecution. In the late 1960s, some states began adopting more liberal abortion laws. For example, several states allowed abortion if carrying a baby to term might endanger the woman's mental health or if she was a victim of rape or incest. The big change came with the 1973 Supreme Court decision in Roe versus Wade. The Supreme Court ruled that state governments could not regulate abortion during the first 3 months of pregnancy, a time that was interpreted as being within a woman's constitutional right to privacy. During the second 3 months of pregnancy, states could regulate abortions on the basis of the health of the mother. States could ban abortion in the final 3 months except in cases of medical emergency. Those in favor of protecting abortion rights cheered Roe versus Wade as a victory, but the issue was far from settled. The decision gave rise to the Right to Life movement, whose members consider abortion morally wrong and advocate its total ban. After the Roe versus Wade ruling, the two sides began an impassioned battle that continues today. The Equal Rights Amendment. In 1972, Congress passed the Equal Rights Amendment, or ERA. To become part of the Constitution, this amendment to protect women against discrimination had to be ratified by 38 states. Many states did so, 35 by 1979, but there was significant opposition to the amendment as well. Some people feared the ERA would take away some traditional rights, such as the right to alimony in divorce cases or the right to have single-gender colleges. One outspoken opponent was Phyllis Schlafly, who organized the Stop ERA campaign. The Equal Rights Amendment finally failed in 1982. The impact of the women's movement. Despite the failure of the ERA, the women's movement would ultimately bring about profound changes in society. Since the 1970s, many more women have pursued college degrees and careers outside of the home than did so in previous decades. Since the women's movement began, two-career families are much more common than they were in the 1950s and 1960s, although a need for greater family income may also be a factor. Employers began to offer employees options to make work more compatible with family life, including flexible hours, on-site childcare, and job sharing. Even though the women's movement helped change social attitudes toward women, a significant income gap between men and women still exists. A major reason for the income gap is that most working women still hold lower-paying jobs, such as bank tellers, administrative assistants, cashiers, school teachers, and nurses. It is in professional jobs that women have made the most dramatic gains since the 1970s. By the end of the 1900s, women made up roughly one-fourth of the nation's doctors and lawyers. Reading check. Summarizing. What successes and failures did the women's movement experience during the late 1960s and early 1970s? American literature. Charlotte Perkins Gilman was a prominent American social critic and feminist writer in the late 1800s and early 1900s. In her most famous work, The Yellow Wallpaper, 1899, she presents the story of a woman diagnosed with hysteria, for whom a doctor has prescribed total rest. Cut off from any intellectual activity, the woman is slowly driven mad by her cure. In this work, Gilman makes a statement against a common belief at the time that women were generally unfit for scholarship. The story remained obscure for almost 50 years, but was rediscovered in the 1970s. It has become a staple of many college literary courses. From The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. In the following excerpt, the narrator of the story, writing in a secret journal, is describing her illness and how her husband John and others feel about it. John is practical in the extreme. He has no patience with faith and intense horror of superstition, and he scoffs openly at any talk of things not to be felt and seen and put down in figures. John is a physician, and perhaps, I would not say it to a living soul, of course, but this is dead paper and a great relief to my mind. Perhaps that is one reason I do not get well faster. You see, he does not believe I am sick. And what can one do? If a physician of high standing and one's own husband assures friends and relatives that there is really nothing the matter with one but temporary nervous depression, a slight hysterical tendency, what is one to do? My brother is also a physician and also of high standing, and he says the same thing. So I take phosphates or phosphites, whichever it is, and tonics and journeys and air and exercise, and am absolutely forbidden to work until I am well again. Personally, I disagree with their ideas. Personally, I believe that congenial work with excitement and change would do me good. But what is one to do? I did write for a while in spite of them, but it does exhaust me a good deal, having to be so sly about it or else meet with heavy opposition. Analyzing literature. 1. What is the main idea behind this passage? How does it support the author's point? 2. Does the narrator think this remedy will help her? Why or why not? What clues can you find about how the narrator feels about her illness? Interdisciplinary activity. Science. Using the internet and other resources, research some ways that diseases and illnesses were treated in the 1800s and 1900s. Do we still use these treatments today? Create a chart showing the progression of treatment for some of the illnesses you researched.